pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. Hour number two begins right now. 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with me, your show host? You utilize the text line, and we'll get to some of your text here in just a moment. Coming up in about 30 minutes, Jerry Carl from, formerly of Congress, hopes to be back in Congress, but he's running an AL1. We'll talk to him. We get him a couple more times before August 11th, and then you get to go vote accordingly. Also on the program for P2 Public Affairs, Will Hampson, the Tuesday regular on this program, will make a time for us. So make sure that you stick around for that. Like I said, we'll recap the news. It's just there's a lot of Iran. Some of this may be a little bit of theater. I think Pig Hegseth is set to testify. The Pentagon, the military's out of money. Department of War is out of money. And he's going to have to testify on Capitol Hill. So I think it's newsworthy. I think it is the most important news story right now, sort of in our day-by-day, blow-by-blow national media discussion. Iran is doubling down, tripling down, and I'd be really worried here. It does says it spooked the markets a little bit into a mild overreaction. Price of crude oil up about 3% across the board. And there's a lot of confusion in the oil markets. How much is an overreaction? What is the right price? Is this just something we're going to have to get used to for the time being? And it's going to be up to domestic production and other OPEC nations to make up the difference. Also, the Lebanese president is at the White House. That's interesting. As what a lot of reports will tell us, now Netanyahu's not saying this. Some of this is leaking out through Trump people, that Trump is a little, you know, as put off with the Netanyahu government. And particular, the continuous strikes in the middle of a tipped ceasefire inside Lebanon. So we'll see if anything comes of that. Is that the key here? If you could kind of contain Israel, Lebanon, is there anything that you're going to get out of it from the Iranians? But I certainly think we're in almost an all-military news cycle right now. I mean, I'm looking at CNN, Fox, MS Now, Newsmax, and News Nation, and it's all either Lebanon or Iran war, and what this means to the Middle East. Ten straight days of attack, and we've been on this yo-yo trajectory for a long time now. That seems to be kind of the hot topic in national news. There could be more here, I guess, with another. You know, there's no movement afoot right now to meet in Switzerland somewhere, send a delegation to a neutral site. You're not really hearing any of those talks. And in fact, now the late Lindsey Graham no longer out there talking about it, but I mean, would you think that you're going to see a more aggressive approach from the Americans? Also, the Democrats are accusing the Pentagon of kind of hiding casualties. That was kind of a theme yesterday, that they're downplaying or underplaying the impact. 100 service members wounded since July 7th. So that's in the last 2 weeks. Now, I you know, the wounds, the definition of wounded, it probably varies. But that's what I guess is leaking out to the media. But just remember this part of it. Media, you're not going to get like a real clear, I don't think you could trust the media. Everything the media do in America is that just, how does this impact our politics? Everything is politicized. If there's something that goes on abroad, well, what does it mean to the presidential election? So you have to start there, and then you have to like kind of play into the biases of the each network and kind of read it there. But I do think that there's ramped up discussion about this because there's things going on Capitol Hill, and the PR shops on Capitol Hill are setting out the talking points. They're getting ready for Hegseth. This is kind of interesting from Yellowhammer News this morning, that Shamari Figures is really raising a lot of money relative to the Republicans. Now, the Republican nomination won't be sealed until August 11th. Shamari Figures will be the Democrat nominee in AL2. $468,372 from, so nearly $500,000 from Shamari Figures. Brett Marquez, $168,000. And they're about tied since, but the most recent quarter, Figures is bringing in some money. Now, we heard earlier this week that the NRCC is getting involved. I don't, you know, to me, when I saw that, well, they're just playing for a win. How embarrassing would it be for the NRCC or anybody associated with, I mean, for this to be close? But Republicans, there will be Democrat enthusiasm. Republicans can't just assume that demographics and historical voting patterns are going to win them AL2. If I am handicapping it, doing the betting odds, yes, Rep Marcus is probably a 10-point favorite, maybe. 45-55, somewhere in that realm. But that's, you know, if a number of people don't show up in November, if something happens that, you know, dispirits voters, especially as it pertains to Donald Trump, who knows? We've seen AL2 go Democrat before in recent history. And this would have been the 2008 cycle. Bobby Bright, I think he beat Jay Love in that. And you had Obama at the top of the ballot. Now, 2 years later, Bright gets beat by Martha Roby, and it's been Republican ever since. But before that, it was Terry Everett forever in a Republican, under Republican control. So the way the lines are drawn, it should be a Republican seat, but they drew it in that 2023 map that we talk about, that the court greenlit, the high court. You got to remember, the legislature at the time was trying to draw the map to make it appear to be an opportunity district. Does that impact the calculus? But Representative Congressman Figures is going to have a war chest. And we'll see what he spends it on. How much does he have to pay off Joe Reed? That continues to be a topic. But I think that's just part of doing business. The price of doing business and just being a Democrat in Alabama is getting on Joe Reed's yellow ballot. 251-343-0106. Do we have any text here? We got a few. Actually, we got a bunch. Let's see here. Leo, Jerry Carl voted to send my tax dollars to Ukraine where it was promptly laundered and given away. That's why I hate Jerry Carl. Does he, if he, and I think he has, like said, he wouldn't have, I mean, it was a mistake. Does that matter? On the texture, Black Shear is 100% correct. Private schools are not the problem. It's the public schools, especially city schools with seemingly unlimited budgets. James Clemens, city school, hired Baker football coach and gave him a $55,000 raise. It is remarkable what public schools will spend to have a good athletics program. But that's part of the, you know, that's part of being a growing city and wanting to be, you want to offer all these amenities. You want to have the pickleball courts and the skateboard park and the movie theaters. And a part of that, too, is just high school athletics and having a team that you can rally around, your community can rally around. It's a big part of the culture. I don't need to tell you guys this, some of you that follow high school football closely. But there are some places that will pay more in taxes to have a good winning football program at their high school. And I don't know how you get around that. But what I do I think is interesting is the Alabama High School Athletic Association has been very, very focused on school choice. They were against it, but they were against it. And the claim was it was private schools that were going to take advantage of it and start recruiting players. And start winning all the championships and dominating certain classifications. And I think there's one school in particular that's like an IMG Academy. I think it's Mars Hill or something. But I mean, generally speaking, a lot of these long-standing, long-time schools are kind of they're just part of the community. But you can't have two sets of rules. I think that they're really going to look at forming their own thing. Hey, Jeff, how many times could Trump totally obliterate Iran? He says it all the time. Well, I think he has, but I think you're not going to beat them into submission that way. You can't airbomb them into submission. Fire Dog, can we rename Cargill and maybe a little Texas? How about Middle East Texas? Make it a state, give it two senators, a couple of representatives, move a bunch of Republicans there. Heck, I'd go nice sunny beaches. Isn't it very industrial? Wasn't that what Bush was going to do with Iraq? Halliburton, Exxon Mobil. It's all about the oil. How's that? I mean, how did that ever come to be? Or how did that work out, those claims? Get to more of your texts on the other side. We got a bunch. I kind of underestimated the text list here. 251-343-0106. Stick around. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Said it was useless. Them people all were fools. Curtis Snow was a pick up to ever play the blues. I saw the light. No more darkness, no more night. Now I'm so happy, no sorrow inside. Praise the Lord, I saw the light. Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the show, you text me and we'll respond to whatever it is that's on your mind. I'm going to make our way through these texts. Tim writes, Jeff, why do they keep having these hearings? They never accomplish anything. And most of the time, if somebody's at fault, there's never anything done about it. It's just political theater. To some degree, that's true. But as a cabinet secretary, you do have an obligation to appear before Congress because they hold the purse strings. And there's certain oversight responsibilities that it's just a function of government. And if you don't respect that, there's a good chance that, you know, a lot of these members of Congress in the House and the Senate view it as an institutional responsibility. That they're not going to put the Trump administration ahead of their, and they would tell you this is their constitutional requirement. So that's why they keep doing it. They have to respect Congress, because if you don't go kiss the ring of Congress, and that's what goes on here, they will start chopping away funding. It's as simple as that. Even Barack Obama had to go fly around the country to get Obamacare passed. He had to put members of his cabinet up there in Congress to make the case for big sweeping policy changes. That's part of it. That's what you got to do. I know it seems kind of silly, especially when you have these like fact-finding hearings. The most recent, probably like the January 6th committee, the select committee that got primetime billing that we had to watch on primetime television, but we can't put the president of the United States talking about election security on primetime television. But it's part of the system of government we have. That's why they show up for it. They respect that. But Benghazi is another great example. Republicans had control, and they call Hillary Clinton to testify. She spends 12 hours here, and they find nothing, and nothing ever happens. Lloyd, maybe Trump should write another memo to Iran that worked really well last time. Killer bees. You think Trump or Israel will drop a nuclear bomb on Iran because they wanted a nuclear bomb? I don't think so. I need to tax your $500,000 for the great Shamari. Take that money and go away. They're going to fight. They wouldn't put up that much cash if they weren't willing to fight for that seat. I think Trump feels totally irrelevant now. Nobody cared about his speech on the 4th of July for America 250, and nobody cared about his primetime address on Thursday about voter fraud. He blew it with the reneging on the major campaign promises, and now he's a lame duck. And it's unfortunate because if he had governed as he had promised, this would have been a historic golden age presidency. Yeah, let's just play this out. If he doesn't bomb Iran, what does the world look like today? Moz, I would like to know, Jerry Carl supports the addition to the farm bill that allows illegals to apply for an H-2A work visa. This was supposedly to be good for 3 years, while the current H-2A visas are good for 9 months. Representative Rogers is a sponsor. Yeah, and we actually reached out to Congressman Rogers' office, and they had no comment. Jeff, you're right. The media reads everything through the lens of domestic policy. That being said, the only hard-hitting news out left out there is John Bachelor's show, which he now that rivals WXQW has gotten out of the news business. Your station should bring John Bachelor on board in the evenings. Your station is about the only serious news station we can listen to for news and politics. On another note, since Rush Limbaugh died and Michael Savage was ran out by the Premier Network cartel, national talk radio is unlistable and has no entertainment value at all. It's not quite what it used to be. And you know, the death of Limbaugh really, really changed talk radio. But for guys like me, and our shows overlapped, you got to know when the whole, I think talk radio moves more in a local or semi-regional direction. Because everybody's watching TV now. Everybody's watching Fox News now. And I think that dips into national syndicated radio. There's a certain familiarity there that can't be replaced with the death of Rush Limbaugh. But we can talk about that later in the show. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Every gambler knows that the secret is it's midnight. Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. You want to be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. Got a long way to go, but happy to field questions or comments or suggestions or whatever is on your mind. Will Hampson coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. He is our Tuesday regular. Joining us now, and we're within that month window of the August 11th Republican primary. But one of the candidates in the 1st Congressional District, Jerry Carl, joins us here on the line. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. I'm doing great. I hope you're doing well.
Doing well. Thank you for coming on. You're a busy man. We always appreciate your time. How's the campaign going?
The campaign's looking very, very positive. Our message is getting out. We were in Escambia County, Gulf Shores, and Flemington yesterday, just three stops. So today we're... Today's a down day. We're actually traveling to D.C. if we can get out of Pensacola, obviously, with the storm. But it's looking very positive. We're very encouraged from what we're seeing.
Well, tell us, what are you hearing on the campaign trail? The world's changed a little bit since I last asked you this question, but if we're talking national politics, it seems to be gas prices in Iran and the Middle East.
That's exactly right. And the Republican Party still sends me a survey that they run every week. And I got it the other day, and that's exactly what's on it is Iran and gas prices. I think people are paying a little bit less attention to the gas prices. I think because they came down. I know they've gone back up because I went to purchase my diesel for my truck, and it was back up to where it was. So we've seen on that, obviously. But Iran, we lost some warriors over there, and it's never a good thing. That's one thing about war that obviously is the worst part. But casualties were, that's part of war, unfortunately, but it certainly doesn't get any easier.
Well, and I guess there's this fear of like a mission creep or, how much is enough? How do we get close to being done with this? Do you sense an impatience or is it, it's mixed for my listeners. There is a little bit of an impatience and the others are like, hey, this is important enough, we believe, because we don't want a nuclear weapon. Our nuclear arm.
No, it's not a nuclear weapon. That's the reason we went in there. I think we all get that. What I was getting impatient from people with Trump just keeping to put things. We're going to give them another 2 weeks. We're going to give them another week. We're going to give them a month to work it out. I think people are getting more impatient with that now that they're actually seeing some results. I feel like there's almost a positive. Something positive coming from that. So I said it on your show probably 3-4 months ago, the only way that's going to resolve itself over there is going to be boots on the ground, not by us, but by UAE, by the Saudis, by the other countries around it going in and cleaning up. And I still believe that. And I think they will do it.
Do you think that's in the realm of possibilities
if you've got those countries dropping bombs, why would they not?
Right.
Well, it's going to be a very unpopular war if we send boots on the ground into Iran. I'll tell you that be very unpopular, and I'm sure the president is watching the elections as much as anybody. So. If we could get the Saudis to police them, their own stuff, the Saudis have been doing the bombing too. Now we're not the only ones dropping bombs.
Well, they seem to be relying on us, UAE, Kuwait. I mean, that's just a reality that let the U.S. do the heavy lifting. How do you transfer that responsibility, at least the perception that it's now their responsibility?
I don't know how you transfer it other than just tell them you need to get it done. You need to take care of it yourself. I mean, they understand those deserts better than we do. I mean, that's jungle warfare when you start fighting you know, those folks on their own turf, and nobody knows it better than the Saudis. So I'm all for the Saudis going in there and doing cleanup. That's the only way it's going to get done, because you can't, I mean, they're like rats. You can't get rid of them unless you get rid of all of them.
Well, they're going to expect, I guess, help from the United States. How much should we be involved?
So we've been involved with the Saudis most all of my life. And we have built the Saudi Air Force. And we've been doing, I know when I was in the early 80s, I was doing business in the healthcare field, and we were shipping things to the Saudis. So we've been involved heavily with Saudi Arabia. So, and I'm sure you got some listeners there who can tell you more stories about other countries over there that we're involved with. So, you know, they're flying our technology and using our technology.
Well, tell me this, how much should we trust the Saudis?
Trust but verify. I don't think it's a matter of trust. If they're equally as worried about Iran as I think they are, which is the same as we are, I mean, they've got as much to win or lose as we do. So, you know, we've got to encourage them to be boots on the ground. I know that's when I told you that 4 months ago, you kind of snickered at it. And I said that was the answer to it. I didn't say it was going to happen, but I truly believe now at this point they're going to play a role in that.
Well, I mean, I don't know where it goes from here. And I, you know, tell me this, and I don't, you know, think it necessarily pertains to AL1, but as far as Republicans, and Republicans got a really good hand here, better than they have in previous midterms with a Republican in the White House. But how much is this going to impact the November 3rd elections?
Well, the one thing that's going to impact November 3rd elections is going to be fuel prices and the cost of living. That's what the president obviously is trying to focus on. But we can't bring the fuel prices down until we figure out how to adjust, you know, adjust from the war. Now, can we stay in that war and still adjust fuel prices? Yes, I believe we can. But I'm not the one to figure that out. The president's got to find somebody that can figure that out, show him how to do it. But it's going to impact the election. It has to. But I don't know how much of a factor it will actually play this round, Jeff. I mean, it's got to a point where nobody's trusting the fuel companies. It's almost like price fixing that, you know, I keep hearing that coming up in some of the conversations I'm having is, you know, people are going, why does it go up 40 cents a gallon overnight, but it only comes down two cents when the price comes back down per barrel? You know, I think that's one thing that that Congress needs to look at.
Yeah, and well,
you know, is it price fixing?
Is there what does Congress have the ability to do? You know, we tried price controls in the past, and what to happen? You've lied.
I don't want price controls. I just want the petroleum industry to know that we're looking. I want them to understand that we're not stupid. We're willing to look. We're willing to ask questions. If we had a hurricane here tomorrow and prices of fuel went up 40 cents a gallon, there'd be some people going to jail. If they're doing it based on that war, I understand what they're buying on the open market. I understand that if they have to spend more, they have to charge more. But when the price comes down, why does it not automatically transfer back? I think those are some hard questions. If we ask, they'll quit playing with the fuel prices.
Well, and sometimes it's the retailers trying to cushion the blow, right? Did they see something going on? And they know that next shipment's going to come in, but it's going to come in at a slightly higher price. Well, they just react accordingly. And they look across the street, and the guy across the street's doing the same thing. I mean, it seems like that there's just a tendency to move it up, but moving it down is a whole different discussion. And, you know, there are benefits to having the cheapest gas in town. The Buc-ee's of the world, I mean, they make money off of doing that. But I, you know, that the reason it comes slow, it's just a matter of, hey, you guys need to be very judicious here with your increases and equally judicious with your decreases.
But I think they need to know that we're watching. I think that's the key right there. Will you find anything? Probably not. Nothing you can hang a hat on. But if they know you're watching, that's important.
Just know someone's on the beat, kind of watching it. We're joined by Jerry Carl here on the program. Congressman, immigration still, that was always like in the election cycle prior to, you know, the war getting underway. It still was immigration, despite Donald Trump, and he's done a lot here, had a lot of success. Are you still hearing that out there?
Yes. You know, everyone's still worried about the immigration the issue. I think we as Congress have got to face that issue and come up with a better immigration policy, something that's more suitable for this country, works better for this country. I don't think we need to be letting some of these countries that we have real issues with and let their people in to shut them out. You know, it's not a given that they get citizenship or entry into this country. We need to make them understand there's value to it. And good behavior is what we're looking for. So that will continue to be an issue. I mean, you check back in political history, you'll see that's always been an issue. But you also see where your Congress and Senate are very slow to react, very slow to respond, especially when you talk about, you know, communities like New York, you know, where you've got a lot of immigrants there. Those have a tendency of moving a little slower here in the South. It's not near as prevalent. So we're pretty quick to say, shut it down. But that is an issue in the field. There's no doubt about it, Jeff.
The question from a texter here, and there's some movement afoot to expand the length, I guess, for an H-2A visa. And it's supposedly in the farm bill, whereas the current H-2A visa is good for 9 months, expanding it to 3 years. I don't know how in the weeds or how much you've been paying attention to that, but is there something structurally that needs to be done there, I guess, with some of this temporary?
I can't go along with the 3 years. I think 9 months works fine in my mind. I know our farm community in some of our high tech industry, well, the farm community probably wouldn't disagree with me as long as they had access to more. You know, they're having to judge a year out, year and a half out of how many that they need. You know, if they say 8 and they have a good season, they actually need 12. They can't just pick up 4. And the high tech industry, the tech industry, you know, they want the 3 years. I understand what they're looking for, and I want those jobs to be filled by Americans personally. So I'm not real big fan of the 3 year idea.
Now, well, it seems to have some support on the Republican side, but this issue, it's maybe not as quite where it was during Biden's era, but it does seem like there's been some progress made.
Well, I would be interested to hear the debate on that. You know, I'm always open to listen to a debate. Doesn't mean that my mind's shut down by no means, but just the idea of 3 years. No, I'd rather focus again on getting those jobs in American hands, those high tech jobs, especially.
Last question. We'll wind it down on this. This latest iteration of the Mobile Bay Bridge. Baseline toll is $7.70, but Alabama Department of Transportation is going to try to create some workarounds for local commuters. How do you feel about it?
You know, I've never been for the toll. I know I get trashed on Facebook saying that I was for the toll. I've never been for the toll. I'm still against the toll. I think we've got to continue to work to figure out if we can come up with a way to get around the toll. I'll never give up talking to Trump or Secretary Duffy about more money, more help. I think, again, it's a national security. I've been saying that from the very beginning. I think it should be viewed that way. I don't think we've, we may have made a strong enough case. I don't know what the conversations have been with the president, but I would like to have that conversation with him because I want to paint the picture of, you know, what could happen, and I don't want to talk about it on the airways, but what could happen as far as national security if we were to, you know, have, a major catastrophe in the tunnel. So I think they need to hear that story. I think they need to hear and paint that picture for them so they understand better why we need help with that bridge. Then the Bayway is going to be another issue. You know, they're going to turn right around and try to do something with the Bayway. The bridge is not going to do much good unless we can get people across the Bayway. So, the tunnel's a problem, but the Bayway's a problem too.
Well, no matter what, if they started tomorrow, it still seems like a 10, 20-year project.
Yeah, but we got to start.
Yeah.
We got to start. You're talking, the bridge itself, I think they've got it down to 5 years. They're talking about 5 years. In government time, that means 8 to 9 years. We never fall within budget, within time frame. Government doesn't, but we'll see. I mean, the president's been so helpful. He cut back on a lot of regulations, and we're so thankful for that. Let's don't be ungrateful for what we received so far, but I still think there's more that can be done.
Well, Congressman, you're always very generous with your time. We'll get you on one more time before you go vote, or we go vote, but thanks for hopping on today.
August 11th, Jeff, I would appreciate everyone please getting out and vote. It's going to be a very low turnout, so I need as many people as I can possibly get to turn out and vote.
Jerry Carl, ladies and gentlemen, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Kind of making small talk, killing time, flirting with the flight attendant. Oh, mama, can this really be the end? To be stuck inside a movie with the Memphis Blues again. Mona tried to tell me.
To the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. If you need to be in touch with me, the show host, you text, and we will respond to what it is that is on your mind. Hey, Jeff, this is Billy D. What would the world look like if Iran actually did develop a nuclear bomb or 9 of them? What would the world look like? Yeah, but that's a big what if. That's the assumption that they were really poised to do something like that. What would the world look like if Trump had just dropped a nuke on Tehran? Or Netanyahu did? And these are what ifs that we don't know how. There's no like proof here. We just had to take their word for it, that they were on the verge of nuclearizing and making something that was going to be usable against anywhere. So, I mean, I don't blame people for being skeptical of that. I think that there's an unfair pushback against people who are skeptical of just how much of a threat the Iranians are. Because it comes up, and you want Iran to drop a nuke on Mobile? What kind of monster are you? And it's like, well, let's just say any other country, North Korea, for example, wasn't going to nuke San Francisco. We never dropped bombs on North Korea, yet they've actually sent rockets into the Sea of Japan. They're actually testing. They're not having much success, but they're actually trying to get ICBM capable. They want to do this. They want to do things like that. So, I mean, Billy, again, so why would you enrich that much uranium, 900 pounds, if you were going to try to? How much was enriched? How do we know? If we knew this, were they capable of deploying it? Were they just going to smuggle a nuclear bomb on a cargo ship and then not be detected? Was that in the realm of possibilities? What would the world look like? I don't know. That was in some ways rhetorical, but I think it would look a lot different politically today. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.